Ladies and gentlemen, lads and ladies, I'd like to welcome you back to the Slinging the Biscuit podcast. This is the new Slinging the Biscuit podcast, episode 28, joined by my amazing co-host.
Is it really new? Is it still new?
That's kind of the tagline that I've been going with since we started. And it kind of, like, I remember when we first recorded the first episode, I was like, I don't know what to say. I'm just going to say whatever comes out of my mouth. And that's kind of what I've kind of stuck with since we started.
It reminds me of a joke that I used to do that my wife really didn't like when I would introduce her. I would introduce her as my first wife.
I'm sure that went over great.
This is my first wife, Candace Ray, and people get confused. They're like, okay. She's like, stop doing that. Same thing. It's like, how many episodes do you say we're in? 28? 29?
This is 28, what are we at? Yeah.
28. There you go. That's my jersey number. There you go. We're not new anymore. We're established.
Well, we are. But welcome, my amazing podcast co-host from the city of Winnipeg, the freezing polar vortex city of Winnipeg, Mr. Dave Wheeler. Dave,
it's gotten better. No, it's floating around zero right now. Things are sloppy out there, but yeah, we're it's okay. We're all right. We got out of the polar vortex. I'm not looking forward to the hydro bill at the end of the month, though. Holy moly! By the way, I think I need to grow a bigger beard like Joe Pace last week. He looked great on the pod for anyone watching on YouTube. And man, oh man, can I party? When can I party with that guy?
Hopefully, sometime in the summer or next season, if you me and him end up in the same pay or same place, not pace.
I just want to sit down and swap stories with that guy because I think it was the tip of the iceberg as far as some of the stories. And the stories that he told were incredible. And, yeah, to caption an old phrase from hockey, what an absolute beauty.
What do you make of the story of him taking a skate off and Marbs trying to stab the other guy at the red line?
You know what? If you say it like, dude tried to take his skate off and stab somebody, it sounds terrible. But when you actually see the footage, the guys in the league know him and know that he was joking around. And even the guy that he said, he's like, how'd you get your skate off so fast? You know what I mean? I love the fact that he's a showman and he was playing off a bit from the Happy Gilmore movie. And I think that's hilarious. He does not seem like a psychopathic, violent kind of guy. I mean, obviously he plays in the Fed, so he's got a little bit of violence in him, but not that kind of violent. I think it was hilarious. And to that point, I did the exact same thing. I would skate without my laces tied up. I used to be the guy, speaking, because I know you're a big equipment guy, right? Yeah, you know, you talked on your vlog last week about you got some new gear coming in and whatnot. I think it was through Pee Wee, so that would have been 13 to 15 years old, 15 to 17, maybe a little younger. Anyways, used to take sock tape and put 10 wraps around my ankles, 10 wraps around my ankles. Number one, I just thought, you know, like it made me a better skater because I was a defenseman and it gave me a little more extra protection. And then I started taking power skating and they're like, get rid of that right now. Like you got to be able to use your ankles. And did the exercise of not having laces on your skates and being able to skate around and really feeling your edges changed my entire world. Like became a better skater, became just everything got better. But yeah, for anyone that has a really stiff like ski boot style way of skating, get it off. Feel your edges. Know your edges. Be a figure skater out there.
What an interview it was last week. I mean, like we talked about last week with him taking the laces out of his skates and going out, yeah, ripping the skate off and warm-ups and the infamous stabbing. Hopefully he doesn't get suspended or reprimanded for that clip. That was hilarious when he sent it to me. I generally thought he was bullshitting me when we were talking about it on the podcast. Like, okay, Joe, you took off your skate. And he sent me the video after, and I looked at it. I was like, no way. Come on. He wasn't lying. He was dead serious.
Honestly, the only thing that would have made it better is if he would have put it on the end of his stick and been like the old McCracken and running around like, ah, ah, scared people that way.
He's like swinging it around.
Yeah, exactly. Exactly. The only thing that would have made it better. By the way, if the apocalypse ever happens, that's what you're going to see me running around with is a hockey skate at the end of a stick. And that's going to be my protection through the zombies.
That's a good weapon of choice. This obviously wasn't the podcast, but so Pacer and I think we ended up talking for like an hour and a bit after we ended up finishing the recording the podcast. And he says to me, I don't know if he's going to be okay with me saying this, but I'm going to say it anyway. He says to me, he says, you and I are going to own a team one day. And you know what?
Wow.
We're only going to travel by train. I think we can do that. And I was like, you've been watching my vlogs? He's like, yeah, I saw you traveling by train. I think, and this was his argument. And I kind of think he has a point. So I brought this up to the guys in the locker room around November, and they thought I was crazy. I'm glad that Joe Pace doesn't think I'm crazy, because my thought processing was the same as his. Was the original six, Chicago, Detroit, New York, Toronto, they mm-hmm. all took the train to games. There was no buses. There was no planes. They took the train to games. And that's obviously been kind of done away. And Joe Pace's thought process was, we're on the bus, you're jammed up like this for like 10, 12 hours in the middle of the night. We got to stop at, you know, Rotten Ronnie's Wonderland, Uncle Mac's Steakhouse, as he calls it, for McDonald's every morning.
Yeah, I loved that, by the way.
Fantastic. but it's not comfortable, as opposed to you go on the train, you can spread out, kick back a little bit. You have a, you know, a dining car, you get a nice meal, you take the Amtrak. Okay, maybe it gets us 3/4 of the way there. We got to rent like a sprinter van to get us to Winston-Salem or, you know, to Watertown. But I like the idea of taking the train everywhere. I think it's a genius idea. He says we're going to do it. I like the idea. I don't know if that's tampering, if him and I are talking about purchasing a team. But, yeah, I love that. I love that.
Well, listen, you've played over in Scandinavia, and you know that the train system over there is great. I've talked about this on numerous podcasts that I've been on. I've talked about it on my radio show before, but it just blows me away that they haven't quite figured out, especially in Canada. The U.S. is a little bit better, but especially in Canada, where we just haven't been able to figure out why rail travel isn't a preferred method of travel. Now, in saying that, I do think there is a way to make that league accessible by train. Obviously, a couple buses here and there with for stops that don't have those cities, and I get it. But if you were going to take the Fed and combine it with the SP, it's not quite balanced enough that you've got North and South teams totally together. You'd have to have a couple that are, you know, like the Detroit Red Wings when they played in the Western Conference for decades, which I think is stupid. But I think you get to a point where you have a Southern Conference and a Northern Conference, and the majority of the time you're just playing inside of your conferences. Like you said, the original six, they were all within trains, right? There was just easy train ride back and forth. I think you can get to a point where you're playing mostly divisional or conference games. The odd time you'd go on a road trip all the way down, you'd play all the Southern teams in one big spot or vice versa. But I really do think if they were smart enough, they get a train sponsor on board and they really make that more, it would be an easier sell for higher quality players to play in that combined league than having to struggle, like Joe said, you know, having to pick guys out of the parking lot because we got six guys in our lineup tonight. I really think you'd be able to find guys that would be more than willing to play in a league that supports the players that way rather than there's a guy, he's just been popping up in my algorithm lately, but I think he used to play in the Fed and talks about how their longest bus ride was like 24 hours on a bus. Like, that's not feasible for an athlete.
Well, for Motor City, so when I left, they were talking about for the Mississippi trip, which they're doing this coming weekend, so they've already done it by the time this episode goes up on Sunday. But they were saying how it's just a really long bus ride, I think like 20-plus hours. Why don't we just fly? So Motor City is renting the bus from the bus company and paying that, and I believe the fee is $7,000 for one trip. So they go for the weekend, 7 Gs, 6 Gs in that ballpark for the trip. So you're paying that, and now you're paying also for the flight tickets because you have to pay for the 25 guys that are going to be going. As opposed to you take that money, you don't buy a bus, you don't rent the bus, you forget about the whole fact that like Joe Pace, his first year in the league, never finished one road trip on the same bus they started at. There's a story that I told him specifically, please don't tell because I want to tell him in person, where the bus broke down about 3 miles away from the rink. And he told the guys, leave it. We'll leave the bus here. We'll deal with it later. Get your bags. We're walking to the rink. We got a morning skate. We got a game to play later tonight. You get rid of all of that. It doesn't happen anymore. You just hop on the train. You get to relax. Like you mentioned, you're probably spending a very similar amount of money, especially considering it's going to be with the general public. You're not getting your own private train. I don't think Joe Pace or me have the money to get our own personalized private train, but it's. I love the idea. I wish the Fed would do it. But I do want to mention one thing, though. With the current setup of the teams, so you have 4 East Coast teams, 2 Michigan teams, 4 Southern teams. With the addition of Baton Rouge, you're going to have 4 Southern teams from 3 to 4. And then with Trenton, New Jersey, you'd have 5 teams in the East Coast. And then you're going to have the
North Atlantic, yeah.
North Atlantic. And then Virginia as well. So you're going to have 6. So 6 East Coast, 2 Michigan, 4 Southern teams. That right there sounds like a good South-North division. One Michigan team goes with the East. One Michigan team goes with the North. It's going to suck, but you have 6 and 6. There's a perfect combo for splitting it up north and south.
Yeah, well, I mean, and then you add the SP in there, and I'm not as familiar with the geography of that, but Joe was talking about it before, you know, the U-Haul falls, you know, the Central League falls, and I think unity is really the key in this one, where if you could combine the SP, because he even said there's not a big difference between the two. I mean, you go to EC to A, you go to A to N, there's a difference in there, and we can talk about those for days on end. But SP and the Fed are pretty close to the point where you could have some parity there and make it a bigger league, more national sponsorship, more national advertising, train sponsorships, that kind of stuff. So again, if you, I don't know how familiar you are, but if you can kind of walk me through that southern belt of what the SP is and see if we can kind of have like this wave coming up where the travel becomes really easy by train.
Yeah, so you have the Pensacola Ice Flyers in Florida. You have the Birmingham Bulls in Birmingham, Alabama. Huntsville, Alabama with the Huntsville Havoc. I believe the SP fans and the people down there are going to kill me. There's a fourth team I'm forgetting in the south. I can't remember them. But on the east, you have the Roanoke Rail Dogs. You have, you have a couple of different eastern teams. And you have a Knoxville team in Tennessee. So you have five southern teams. You mix everybody up together. You could probably split it up, let's say, 8-8, maybe 9-9 teams with the divisions. I think it'd be a fantastic mix-up like we talked about. And also with the Vermilion team folding up shop the other day before their game, that was a interesting story. You want to get into that, or do you want to just finish off the...
Well, no, listen, just really, really quickly, I just want to make sure we get all the teams in there for all the fans out there. The Birmingham Bulls, Evansville Thunderbolts, Fayetteville Marksmen, Huntsville Havoc, Knoxville Ice Bears... I'm not going to say this wrong. Is it Macon or Macon? Macon Mayhem?
Macon Mayhem.
Macon Mayhem. Pensacola Ice Flyers, as you mentioned. Peoria Rivermen. The Rivermen? They used to be in the A.
Yep.
What?
Lost a lot of money.
Quad City Storm. I'm going to say this one too. Roanoke?
Roanoke Rail Dogs.
Roanoke Rail Dogs. There we go. Thank you. And the Vermilion County Bobcats. So, again... That's a small league. You combine that with the Fed, you become more of a national-sized league, more federal advertising. It's crazy. Like, seriously, I'll be your commissioner. I'll be your commissioner. I got ideas. I can figure this out. Travis is going to own a team with Joe Pace. I'll be the commissioner. I'll keep them a-holes in line. We can figure this out. My contact information is somewhere down there.
We just need somebody to cut the checks for the cash calls, as Joe called.
Sure. Yeah, why not? We'll find someone with deep pockets. As Ryan Reynolds said on Jimmy Fallon one night, I need a sugar mama or a sugar daddy or somebody to fund this whole thing. But, I want to buy the Ottawa Senators. So need someone with deep pockets to take a chance on what could be a really good unity between two leagues that could probably use each other. Seriously, when you think about it.
I love that idea. I think it's a great idea, but... Again, I stop pucks. I'm not the owner or the marketing manager or the GM of any team in the Fed Zeno. And as Joe talked about, we talked about after the podcast, I just shut up and say, yes, sir, I'll be at practice tomorrow at 11. Good night.
Right.
But.
Right. And that's, as long as the check clears every 2 weeks, you're good.
It's very true. Speaking of checks not clearing and needing a sugar daddy, there's a team in the SP. Now, this is an absolute joke. People talk about the Fed Zeno being a bush league. This here is a joke. So the Vermilion Bobcats in the SP, they haven't been having a great season. But so I guess the owner declared, I think two, might have been 3 weeks ago, that, hey, he's running into a little bit of financial problems. And one of the rules of having a pro hockey team is at the start of the season, you make sure you have enough money to go the full season so that you can finish the season. Because you can't leave the players high and dry with nowhere to play and sandbag them, the sponsors. Like you just don't do that. And so the Vermilion Bobcats go to play a home game on, I believe, last Saturday night. The Quad City Storm come in. Quad City shows up to the Vermilion rink, does warm-ups. The Vermilion team is not out there. They line up for the opening face-off. The fans are in the building. They have everybody out there, but their home team is not there, did not show up. No management, no players, nothing. So what did the Quad City team decide? We're here. We owe these fans something. They've been sandbagged. They've been duped. They've all paid for their tickets, and they got nothing. So guess what? Everybody come on the ice. We're going to do a skate with the fans. The Quad City Storm players did a skate with the Vermilion Bobcats fans. Class act by Quad City. But what an absolute joke. So Vermilion announces last night that we are ceasing operations. We have no money. We are done for the season. And there will be a decision on season ticket holder refunds later on in the week. And it reminded me of Jackie Moon in Semi-Pro when they wrestled the bear. And he says, there will be no refunds given. Your refund will be escaping this death trap with your life.
Good reference. Okay, let me drop a little old guy knowledge on you here. And I'm not trying to be an ageist here. But I think there's something that a lot of people don't really understand when it comes to team ownership and really the inner workings of it. Now, Mark Cuban, I think we all know Mark Cuban. He is a entrepreneur, became a .com millionaire. You've seen him on Shark Tank. He's the owner of the Dallas Mavericks, okay? the NBA kind of decided to go, let's give this a shot and see how it goes. Because he was really young. He was in his 30s when he bought this team. Mark Cuban is what is considered new money. Okay? New money as far as meaning, like, he came upon this recently. Like, he didn't grow up with money. He's new money. In comparison, you look at the rest of the league, that's what's called old money. They grew up with money. This was generational wealth. This is money that has been passed down from generation to generation. And there's a certain idea that when you grow up with money like that, you understand money a little bit better. Mark Cuban was a bit of a clown the first few years that he was in the NBA. He's sitting behind the bench and he's yelling at the referees and they're getting involved. And even the coaches and the GMs are like, whoa, like this is not how an owner is supposed to go up there and sit up there. And he's like, I'm the owner. I will do what I want. And the NBA kind of went, this is a bad experiment. This is a really bad experiment. And to give that qualification, when Jim Balsillie, who was the head of research and motion out of Hamilton, Ontario, he's the guy that gave you the BlackBerry. If anyone remembers the BlackBerry, that's the guy. He was also new money. He wanted to buy an NHL team. The NHL went, no, we saw what happened down in the NBA. We didn't like the looks of it, so nope, not going to happen. So when it comes to these smaller leagues, and I say that with all of the admiration of my heart, you've got two types of owners. One that realizes what this is a tax write-off. It may go well, it may not. And if it goes south, it's a tax write-off. I can still keep funding it. I enjoy going to the games. You know, it's good for the community. I can be out there in front, shake hands. We're not talking like big time money. We're talking like medium money. Like, they ain't wealthy, but they're rich. They realize that team is going to be a tax write-off for them. Then you've got people who are just coming into a little bit of money going, I've always wanted to own a hockey team. Oh, this would be great. I'm going to make so much money off because I own a hockey team. You own a franchise. That's guaranteed money. Not realizing that a lot of these smaller leagues are not exactly money-making leagues. So that's why you get a situation like this where they just go, I ran out of money. I'm done. I'm sorry. And they just kind of walk away. So you have to have responsibility and ownership. And I know as much as you and Joe love the idea of that, you got to know why you're getting into this.
You have to expect that in the first 3 years, you're not going to make any money. It's just the reality of it. You don't have a fan base. You don't have anything cultivated. You're literally starting from scratch. You have nothing. So you have to like give tickets away for you. You got to get people to the rink to buy in. I love the product. I love the atmosphere. And they come. Now, the Southern fans, as you and I talked about 2 weeks ago, and Joe and I talked about, like, these people are crazy. I love Southern people in the Southern states. They get a little bit of a bad reputation, but they are the most passionate hockey fans I think there is in all of North America. Just my opinion.
You shouldn't give a crap about what their knowledge is of the game. Are they paying at the gate? Are they buying beer? I don't care who comes through the gate. I don't care if it's their first hockey game or your 1,000th hockey game. You know what I mean? Like, if you're showing up, good. Just pay your money. As an owner, that's all you should care about.
You got to get them in the door. You got to give them a good product. And they're going to keep coming back. And that's
right.
I think that's basically a successful business model for a minor pro hockey team. But if you know you want to charge excessive amounts for tickets, you don't want to grow the fan base, it's tough. I mean, you look at, and I know I sent Dave some information before we started recording the show, but the viewership for Fed games, I mean, I'm looking at everything right here right now, like on average, this is the average numbers. So Binghamton is pulling in almost 4,000 people a game on average. Columbus is pulling in about 3,200. Carolina, Mississippi, and that 2,500 to 3,000 fans a game. 3,000, like, that's crazy that these teams are pulling this in. And then you have the Elmiras, the Port Hurons, the Danburys pulling around 2,000 people. That's still a good amount. And then you have Motor City, Watertown, and Delaware kind of in the last three spots pulling in under 1,000, I believe. So this is as of middle of February, first week of February. Motor City's averaging 860, Watertown 760, and then Delaware is 700. So it's tough if you want to try to make money off that right away as opposed to like growing the fan base and getting people in the door.
And again, you remember this. I'm guessing you probably did this in Junior B, but at one point throughout the season, you probably did a volunteer situation where you did something for Christmas and you did a food drive and all the guys wore the jerseys and stuff. Am I right?
Yep. I remember a Christmas little fundraiser in Arbor going out to the Legion. I was flipping pancakes for people, giving them pancakes. Here's your free breakfast. Thank you very much. Helping make crafts with the kids, bringing everybody to the line for, you know, coming to meet Santa. I never got paid for that. It's just for building the community, building some camaraderie towards the team and some loyalty to, oh, you know what, the players treated us well. You know, there is our backup goalie making us pancakes. That's great. We'll come see him warm up maybe on Saturday night.
Right. So we talked about this a few weeks ago, and we took a little heat for it as far as, you know, these promotional nights and these hey, come to the rink because it's this night or it's that night or it's this night. That's just a different version of it. That, but to me, that is more community involvement. And a lot of these leagues should do more of that. It should be scheduled. Hey, you five guys, you're going here this today. You five guys, you're going there next week, whether it be the children's hospital or you're going to serve tables at a charity dinner and wearing your jersey and just getting recognition. It's free advertising, and you're using what you have instead of spending money to do it. There are way more creative ways to get in people into the community and get people out to the rink and have your guys be your spokespeople. Like, actually have your players be the ones saying, you should come to a game. It's a lot of fun. Here's the ticket price. Here's a couple tickets. Come try it out for free. There, I know a lot of business owners that would say, I would spend upwards of about $20 per person, anyone, to get them in my store. Like, I would give them $20 to come into my store because I feel strong enough about my product that if I can get them in, I know they'll be a repeat customer and I'll make my buddy back on their second visit.
And you could argue that if you don't feel comfortable enough to give away free tickets and get people in the rink, maybe the product isn't as strong as what you're leading on to believe. But I just want to say, just for the record, because I did get myself into some hot water maybe 2 or 3 weeks ago when we talked about this, I will play anywhere that I'm wanted, whether that's Motor City, expansion, it doesn't matter. If I'm wanted and I'm treated well, I will go anywhere. That's what I want. I want to play. I also do think that I, you know, me and Dave collectively, but specifically on my half, I think I have some really good ideas for how to grow a team and how to get people to come to the rink. I like to think, and I think, you know, people like Joe Pace appreciate that. So there is a way to make minor pro hockey extremely successful. I mean, we've just outlined in the last, I don't know, 15 minutes, some amazing ideas for how to do that.
It's no different than any other industry. When you first start in, you have to make yourself as invaluable as possible, which means you learn as many jobs as you possibly can, regardless of what the job site is. If it means you have to, you're working in an office building, it's like, oh, geez, the toilet's flooded and the janitor's off today and they're not going to be in tomorrow. Then go, guess what? Go grab a plunger. It sucks, it's dirty, but you're going to be a hero of the office. And it's no different than any other industry. Sometimes you got to get your hands dirty. Sometimes you got to go in. There are some that would be like, hey, just shut up, put your pads on and stop the pucks. But there's other ones that would go, we need help. We're a small community. We're a small team. We don't have a lot of money, and we'll take any ideas we can get. So I don't think it's exclusive to the sports world. It's just any industry in general. And if you work your butt off, you're going to see the results in spades. I mean, it's really true. Speaking of which, one thing that you need to do if you're going to be working hard, make sure you get yourself a decent pair of underwear.
And it starts with the team at Sheath Underwear. If your balls stick to the side of your leg on the job site, if you're out having a date night with the missus, you get a little bit sweaty, a little bit stinky, you don't want to taste a little salty later for date night. I don't know if that's going a little bit too far, but you get a pair of Sheath Underwear that separates it and compartmentalizes everything into its own delegated compartment. You feel good. You're not sweating. You don't stink. You're not like a woolly mammoth out there, and you're feeling good. And again, this starts with the team of Sheath Underwear. Now, Sheath Underwear was pioneered by a former U.S. Marine in Robert. Now, Robert was out in Afghanistan and Iraq, spending weeks and weeks on end in the same pair of gitch. And he said, I'm tired of having my twig and my biscuit stuck to the side of my leg. I'm also tired of wearing the same underwear. I need something that's going to help me get more value out of my underwear. Enter Sheath Underwear and the dual pouch technology, which again is a separated, segregated compartment for your twig and your biscuit to go into separate compartments. They do not touch. They physically cannot touch. And you're feeling good. You're feeling fresh. You got the amazing bamboo mesh that is cooling. It's comfortable and it's light. And it's not like that old pair of like Boxer Joes where you wear them for a couple months and then you got to pull the waistband out. You let it go and it doesn't stretch back. It's not like that. Sheath Underwear is the best money, or the best underwear that money can buy. And you got to go to sheathunderwear.com. You can use the code BISKIT69 for 20% off. That is BIZKIT69. And you get the pair of the best underwear that money can buy.
There's not enough conversation between genders when it comes to the things, the equipment that we have to deal with. So, women, I will try and explain this the best I can. Imagine that for an entire day, your boobs are just going to be tucked in like tight like this, like all day long. And then you're going to throw a sweater over top of that. And you're just going to have that sweat dripping right down to your belly button all day. You'd hate that, right? That's why we have wonderful things like push-up bras and yoga bras and all these sports bras, all this type of thing. Okay, so imagine, and I'm going to be very medical in this, imagine that the penis here and the balls are like this, and they're like together all the time. Same idea. You're going to get that sweat dripping in different areas. So what the sheath does is it takes this here and puts this here and just separates them beautifully. They get along, but they don't need to be together all the time. They work together in tandem, but this makes sure that they're like they have their own space and they can work together when they need to.
If you're not watching the video version of the podcast, you have to. I'm going to send the video clip to Robert. I think he's going to pay a lot of money for that breakdown, that diagram you just did. That's incredible. That's fantastic. That's amazing. Again,
I can bring these ideas to our new league between the SP and the Fed.
Everybody gets a pair of sheath underwear. Again, that's code BISCUIT69, 20% off. There's a link in the video description and as well as in the Apple and the Spotify for the podcasting notes. From people who need value for their money to people who have no money, like we think. So if you're from the city of Winnipeg, which is, you know, where most people listen to the podcast are from, but, you know, Dave and myself also, there's a gentleman who played for the Winnipeg Jets. His name is Evander Kane, and he racked up some very interesting stories from around the city of maybe bouncing on some bills and not paying his tab. And my amazing co-host, Mr. Dave Wheeler, not only had a front row seat to all this, but knows a little bit personally, and maybe can kind of guide us through some of these stories.
Okay, so I will give you a little context of this. So before the Winnipeg Jets came back, I was working with the Manitoba Moose. I was the in-house announcer. If you've listened to the podcast before, I've explained it before, but for those that are new, when you're at a game and there's a timeout and you look up on the center clock, the drop clock, and that really annoying person with the microphone jumps on and goes, "Hey, we're here with Travis up here in section 305. Travis, have a look up the board. We're going to see if you can win a $25 gift certificate if you get to your favorite restaurant." I was that guy, okay? So once the Moose became the Jets, I continued on with that job because I was working with True North Sports and Entertainment. So again, because I got to go from one section to the other, I have access to underground, and I'm by the dressing room sometimes, and I would bump into the guys, and some guys I knew from previous years playing hockey, or a guy that knew a guy, like, "Hey, oh, yes, yeah. So I'm not going to say that I had full, I don't think I was ever once in the dressing room, but just in the hallways and whatnot. Now, Evander Kane has a lot of natural hubris. He has a lot of natural just confidence and whatnot. And one of the things about playing in a smaller market is that you're a big fish in a smaller pond. Dustin Byfuglien said it really well to me one night. We were out for beers after a game with a bunch of the guys and whatnot. I was invited out. And I said, "So, man," I said, "you know, it's been half a season. How are you enjoying Winnipeg so far?" He goes, "I prefer Atlanta." I'm like, "Really?" He goes, "Honestly," he goes, "I can go out with my girl. We can grab some dinner. And I don't get hounded for autographs." He goes, "I can't go anywhere here. That's just," and that the proof's in the pudding on that one, as to part of the way he stepped away. Never really cared about the game. Never really enjoyed that part of the game. He enjoyed being a small fish in a bigger pond. Evander Kane loved being a big fish in a smaller pond, to the point where the city of Winnipeg really loves their hockey. I'm not going to say it's equivalent, but it's comparable to the way the people in Green Bay love the Packers. Like, they just take care of these guys. A Packer walks into a restaurant, they're not paying. Nope. Just happy that you decided to come to my restaurant. Winnipeg was a very similar way. There was a restaurant in Polo Park that Evander decided to kind of make his local watering hole, his local eating spot, got to be really good friends with the manager, and a lot of the rumors that you heard about, "Oh, I heard he skipped out on a bill. His best friend was the manager. If he happened to skip out on a bill one night and it became too much, him and his friend would say, "Hey, man, you owe me a few bucks for this." And he'd say, "Yeah, no problem. It's all good." There was other times where he'd say, "Don't worry about it, Evander. Look at all these people around. Look at all the people that you brought in. I got your tab tonight." So I think he was demonized a little too much on the whole skipping out on the bill thing. But some of the antics that he did while he was in Winnipeg, I don't want to say were legendary, but they were definitely memorable. To the case in point, there was one time where he got into a dust up with this old lady, and he took out a billboard in Winnipeg with if I remember correctly, there was like a ring on it. And he's like, "This is for you. I'm super sorry. I love you." And then had his signature Evander and had her picture up there and stuff, like that kind of guy. Like, remember the movie I Love You, Man, with Paul Rudd? That kind of idea, like where you're driving down the street, you're like, "Why is my face on a billboard? I didn't approve this." Like, he was that kind of guy that would just be that grandiose about things. Then there's the classic story, and some people may or may not have heard this, and I'll only share three and then we can move on. But you can kind of see like what he's going through now with the bankruptcy and, you know, owing a bunch of casinos in Vegas money. And he lived outside of his means. And that's not uncommon. A lot of people live outside their means. And it's just the way we've been designed as humans. It's like, oh, yeah, you can get credit. Totally. Absolutely. You get credit. You look like a big earner. Absolutely. We'll give you a $500,000 loan here from the casino. Enjoy yourself, Mr. Kane. He, looking back on the earlier behavior, the rumor, and I've just heard this from being in the tunnels, okay? I didn't witness this, but apparently Evander showed up in less than what you would consider proper attire for a professional hockey team. May or may not have been a tracksuit. Like a fancy velour tracksuit, like Elton John-style studded rhinestones tracksuit, but not a attire that you would wear to a rink for a hockey game. So apparently, a few of the guys decided that was inappropriate, so they threw all of his gear in the shower and just turned on the hoses saying, he's not wearing that anymore. Good luck figuring out how to get out of the rink. He did not do a good job of making himself adored in the locker room, which was part of the reason why he left. Because Winnipeg's such a tight-knit community, things got blown out of proportion in some areas and were very truthful in others, but he just wasn't the humble kind of, I like being part of this community kind of player. Now, I know he's kind of shifted gears a little bit. He's had a lot of success in Edmonton. He's done very well. Sounds like he's got his stuff figured out. But he just was too young, too egotistical to be playing in Winnipeg at that time. Is that fair?
That is pretty fair. Pretty spot on.
Okay. Yeah. That's what I can tell you as far as my experience. Any interactions I had with him, I'd bump into him in town the other time. I remember specifically seeing him at the RBC on Portage and Arlington one day. And it's like, hey, Vander. It's like, hey, Wheels, what's going on, man? And it was just, I never had an issue. I'd see him at the Joey's and whatnot, and I never had a personal issue with him. Thought he was fine, but those are just the things that were, we'll call the issues when he was playing in Winnipeg.
I can picture you at the RBC Bank. Hey, Kaner, how's it going? Wheels, what's up, man? Oh, I just deposited my paycheck. It's Paycheck Friday. How about you, Kaner? See this? It's got a stack of like 500 Gs. Going to spend it tonight right to the Chino on McPhillips.
You're not terribly off on the interaction we had. You're not far off.
It's almost like I was there.
Why are you in my head? How did you get in there?
Sorry, not 500, it's 700,000. My bad. My apologies.
Oh, man. Man.
One thing that I did want to talk about was, you know, from one guy, I guess, who has filed for bankruptcy to another, and Robin Leonard, got me thinking on kind of expanding on a topic that we had a couple weeks ago. Now, Mr. Wheeler, you are how tall? Before you answer this, my woman, she's going to kill me for mentioning this. She says to me the other day, we were having coffee, and she says, I always thought Dave was kind of like a short king. I thought he was like 5'5", 5'6". And it's a combination of the way that you speak and the camera angle that you have in the video version. So now I noticed that you have changed the angle a little bit from, you know, previous episodes, but it usually looks like down on you as opposed to like mine kind of looks a little bit up and kind of coming. So she thought that if we change the camera angle, you look a little bit taller. But how tall are you, Mr. Wheeler?
I stand at 6 feet 2 inches tall, which is about 187 centimeters for those that are in metric. I just to give you an indication of how quickly I grew when I was a kid, my parents and a lot of the other parents in minor hockey got really tired of buying a new team jacket every single year. So they just thought, why don't we just make it uniform throughout all of the different divisions and they can just grow into it, put their name on it. It'll just say the team name instead of saying like peewee, bantam, midget, whatever it may be. Just it's the logo because we all share the same logo, and then you just grow into your jacket. So they assumed because I was growing so big that I would get a bigger jacket. And so I still have this jacket. And I remember bringing it to the studio one time when I was doing a television show in Winnipeg, and Kelly Butler, who is a former football player with not only the Purdue Boilermakers, but the Detroit Lions and the Winnipeg Blue Bombers. He's 6'8", 320 pounds. This jacket fit him like a glove. Fit him like a glove. Keep in mind, I'm 16 years old, 6'2", probably about 185 pounds, wearing a jacket that would fit a 6'8", 320 pound man. So I kind of stopped growing, and then just I stopped growing up and I started growing out. Not as tall as you, though, sir. Please tell everyone how tall you are.
6'5", that's 195 centimeters. Now, the reason I bring this up I talked about how the NHL will not have any goaltenders that are under 6 foot three, and obviously the whole online community in the goalie world said, how dare you say that? That's discrimination. Just because you're shorter doesn't mean you can't do the job better. That's right. Anybody could technically do the job speaking. Could I go to the moon? Of course. Possible? Yes. Probable? No. Now, I did some research, and I want to read this word for word. Now,
Travis Ridgeon, the scientist, everybody. Here he comes.
Hold on. Let me put my tinfoil hat on for a sec. Now, for anybody that disagrees and anybody that believes that short goalies are making a comeback, first off, that's fake news. That's not real. That's made up in fantasy land. And here's why. In the top 30 goalies in the National Hockey League based on save percentage. So these are starting goalies. So guys that play night in, night out. These are established guys. These aren't just like random guys that I pulled out of my ass to make a stat out of. So of the top 30 save percentage leaders as of February, second week of February 2023, three of the top 30 guys are 6 foot one or shorter. And those guys are UC Saros at 5 foot 11, which everybody likes to talk about. Georgiev, all-star goaltender. Georgiev in New York at 6 foot one, and in Colorado, and Shesterkin at 6 foot one also. Everybody else is 6 foot two or taller. Now, there are a lot of 6 foot twos. Now, people will say that, Casey DeSmith, what about him? He's 6 feet tall, almost 5'11". Well, he's 31st. So we're really getting down the pecking order here. The top five goaltenders in save percentage in the league right now. Linus Ullmark at 6 foot five. Ilya Sorokin, 6 foot three. Sorry, Linus Ullmark. Ilya Sorokin, 6'3". Jake Ottinger, 6'5". Connor Hellebuck, my boy, 6 foot four. And then here's your short guy, Philip Gustafson at 6 foot two. Now you have an Andre Vasilevsky, who people will argue is the most dynamic, most mobile, most dominant goaltender on the planet, 6 foot four. I may or may not have also been told from a source the other day that apparently he got the same hip surgery that I got on both of his hips. His draft year. Now, he did not have any impingement or any damage. He just goes to the surgeon and says, listen, I want to be a freak. Fix this for me so it's not a problem. And he got it done. And if you see the way that he moves, it's pretty easy to believe that that was the case. But
okay, I'm not going to argue your stats. Okay, so basically what you're telling me is if I put a water bottle in front of the net or a bucket in front of the net, the bucket's going to have a better chance of stopping a shot towards the net. I get that. I understand. But I'm going to give you an example, and this is the second time I'm bringing up the NBA today on the show. Guy by the name of Sean Bradley, 7 foot six, drafted by the Philadelphia 76ers, and he wore number 76. Like, the stars just aligned. You'd think that a guy that didn't have to jump to put the ball in the basket would be the most dominant player in NBA history. But he wasn't, because he had zero skill. So I ask you, if you had a guy who was 5 foot 10, like Dominic Hasek, and would flop around, and you couldn't figure out how he stopped the puck. If you had your choice of him.
For the record, you were mistaken. Dominic Hasek was 6 foot two.
Was he really?
He was 6 foot two. Yep, that's
okay.
Yep,
that's still under your threshold of 6 foot five. So if you had a guy like Dominic Hasek at 6 foot two, flopping around, looking like a dead fish out there stopping pucks, or a guy who was 6 foot five, and they had the same save percentage, you're telling me you take the guy who's 6 foot five?
No. So I'm going to take the guy who's 6 foot two. The point that I was trying to make was that when you're talking to NHL scouts and goalies that I speak to that go to the draft and go and speak to scouts, they all say, I'm not looking at a guy if he's 6 foot one or shorter. I'm just not. And if you look at the top save percentage leaders, everybody is 6 foot two plus. There's a lot of 6'2s, a lot of 6'3s. The 6'4s and the 6'5 kind of start to get a little bit rare. And to my knowledge, there's nobody over 6 foot six. You used to have the Ben Bishop at 6'7 and the Jason Mission at 6 foot nine, but that doesn't exist anymore. But you do have Mads Sogard, Danish-born goaltender, was on the old podcast at 6 foot eight for the Ottawa Senators playing in the AHL right now. But the point being is that the scouts have someone that they're looking at, because when you're drafting a guy, let's say at 18, 19, 20, you're not going to see that really pay off until 25, 26, 27-ish, maybe even later. So in that time, a lot of things can change. Like, you can't play the same way at, let's say, the Western League that you can in the American League as the Coast or in the NHL. So what do they look at? Well, I know for a fact that you can't teach size and you can't teach the guy to grow. If the guy's 6 foot five, I can't make him shorter. If the guy's 5 foot 11, I can't make him any bigger. And sure, as somebody who I'm putting food on the table for my family, the team pays my bills, and I want to keep this job where I'm getting paid, I don't know, let's say $60,000, $80,000 a year to scout, or I'm getting paid how many millions of dollars a year to be a general manager or a coach. I want the guy that's going to give me the confidence. And the confidence is, My 6'5" guy will get hit. We can teach him how to be a goalie later. I can get a goalie coach. I can get the best goalie coach, and we can teach him how to stop pucks. I can't make him bigger. And that's the logic behind that.
So you're going with the Zdeno Chara type idea, because when Zdeno Chara was drafted by the New York Islanders, the guy looked like a newborn calf on skates. Like, it was bad. But they went with that ideology. He's going to get bigger. He's going to get smarter. And he became one of the most dominant players in the National Hockey League. The Winnipeg Jets are playing with that experiment right now with Logan Stanley. They're really hoping this guy pays off, and they're willing to take their time with him. And I get that. But are you going to miss out on a guy like Connor Bedard, who is under 6 feet tall, if you have the first overall draft thinking, just don't think he's big enough?
A lot of the scouts do have that argument on Bedard. And I know you and I talked about him, how he's, you know, like 5'10", 5'9", whatever he is. Now, I think that the outliers to all these rules. So, like, if you're as dominant and elite as he is, where he's putting up 110 points in 30 games, yeah, you can be as short as you want. When you put up those numbers, right, like, you have to prove that you can play, as opposed to, like, a taller guy has to prove that he can't play, right? But we're also talking about the guy's going to be in the league next year playing for probably the Arizona Dirt Dogs if they, you know, manage to pull together a team for next season and keep the arena going. But
by the way, for the record, Super Bowl is today for those that are going to be watching the football. There's also the Waste Management Phoenix Open going on in Scottsdale right now. Do you think anyone gives two rat cents about the fact that the Coyotes are playing at home this weekend? Nope.
Well, in all fairness, probably it's all six people, including, you know, one that listens to the podcast. Shout out to Matt from Arizona. But yeah.
Hi, Matt.
Hope you're doing well. Enjoy the game tonight.
I don't even know if they're playing in town or not. If the NHL was dumb enough to schedule the Arizona Dogs, the Arizona Coyotes playing at home on a Sunday with the competing, the NHL is pretty smart about not scheduling any games on Super Bowl Sunday. They're usually pretty smart about that. I got to check now. Just for the sake of being accurate, I'm checking to see who is playing, who is dumb enough to get games scheduled this coming Sunday. All right. So full schedule set. Yep, they got games. Canadians and Oilers, Flyers and Kraken, Capitals and Sharks, Golden Knights and Ducks. But they're all scheduled that they should be done by the time kickoff happens.
You know who could save the Arizona Coyotes? Joe Pace.
Joe Pace?
Joe Pace will save the Coyotes. Joe Pace will come in at the 11th hour, and he will save the franchise and move him to Hamilton or Quebec City and get the franchise out. Actually, no, Joe Pace would never move to Canada. Never mind. Scrap that idea.
Yeah, well, I mean, he'd work out of Arizona and then just, you know, skip the games that go up north of the border. That's what he'd do.
I've heard of a few people that work remotely like that where they, well, anyway.
Joe, I know you're listening to this podcast right now. All the things we've been talking about, man, I'm telling you, we're going to get together for a beer and we're going to figure this all out. It's going to happen.
I don't know if I should tell this story or not. I was told the other day, and we're going to leave names and teams out of this. I was told the other day by a player in the Fed that said, hey, my coach called me and he wants to know what your plans are for next season, shall we say. And he's trying to put together why I don't have any games played this season and whatnot. And we came to the conclusion that this person in charge of this team in the Fed says, I would pay Trav so much money just to be my backup and to promote the hell out of the team and do all the promotional nights and do the videos and do the TikToks on social media. I would make that guy the richest guy in the league and he wouldn't even be playing all of our games. And I said, I could do that. You could trade me for a bag of pucks and a Detroit-style pizza. Accept the deal. I'll bring the pizza with me.
You can draw parallels to exactly what you just said to a goaltender that might be a little smaller. Is he? Come see the world's smallest goaltender. He's 5'2" and he jumps up to catch the pucks that are going into the top corner. I mean, are you looking to get people in the seats or are you looking to win? Because there's two different trains of thought on that one. And all depending on what league you're in, one might be more important than the other.
Joe Pace is an entertainer. He says, we are here to entertain. Yep. We do not play professional hockey. We are entertainment on ice.
Mm-hmm. True.
Couldn't agree more.
Wrap this up before we start getting any more conspiracy theories. We got any more sponsors we got to mention?
We have no sponsors for this week. I did have pencil and notes, a quick little update on my hip and kind of a little bit of a return to skating. Also, you know what? Let's tell the story about how I almost met Liam Neeson. This is a good one. We'll do that right now.
Whoa. I have a very specific set of skills.
So this story still haunts me to this day because I never got to meet Liam Neeson. But so the Fort Garry Hotel in Winnipeg, it's one of Canada's Grand Railway hotels when the Transcontinental Railway was exploding. And Grand Trunk, CP, and CN all said, we need huge, luxurious chateau-style hotels so that people can stop for a meal and get the meal there at the hotel by the station. And then they can carry on with their journey because they didn't think dining cars were feasible. So anyway, the Fort Garry Hotel in Winnipeg.
That's where I married my beautiful wife. It's where I married my beautiful wife.
You married her at the Fort Garry at the FG?
Absolutely, yep.
Nice, nice. And the beautiful ballroom, fantastic, incredible hotel. They've changed ownership now. They're owned by the Marriotts, and it's not the same hotel as what it was at this point in time. But anyway, so this is like 2019, summer of 2019. And I'm doing some freelance photography. I'm doing time lapses out of the hotel room windows, you know, filler stuff for my vlog, doing some stuff around the hotel. And I'm giving this all to the hotel for free to use at the time when they were independently owned by, you know, the mom and pop that owned them at the time. And so I roll in around 4:30, 5 a.m. It's summertime, right? I want to get up before the sun comes up so I can get my time lapses. And Eric, the front desk guy, says, Trav, you got to come over here. And he talks just like that. And I says, what's up, Eric? he talked like he had like a hole in his throat with like a cigarette coming out of it. So just to kind of paint a picture, he was a very large man. Great guy, by the way.
Right.
I don't think he works there anymore. But anyway, he says, come over. And I said, Eric, what's going on? He says, you will not believe who just walked down here 30 seconds ago. And I said, who? He says, Liam Neeson. I was like, what's he filming? Like another episode of Taken? He's like, yeah, in Gimli. It's like an Ice Road Truckers version of Taken. I was like, no way. And he's like, he literally walked out like 30 seconds before I walked in. I probably, when I was walking down Broadway, I probably saw him walk out of the hotel and get in his cab and take off. I didn't put two and two together. But so I almost met him there. And I was told the story that the night before he had just checked into the hotel and he's coming out of the hotel and he wants to find a good place to eat. And obviously, he's never been to Winnipeg before. Obviously, he's filming the movie.
I'm looking for a very specific place to eat.
Pizza or ribs? So, if you've been to the Fort Garry Hotel, they have a valet service. Or sorry, if you haven't been there, they have a valet service at the front, at the like front parking area in the front of the hotel. So he walks down the steps to the front to the valet guy and says, excuse me, sir, where's the nearby steakhouse? And he's talking about, at the time, it would have been 295 York. They might be a Carnival Italiano chop house, whatever they are. But so the guy looks at Liam Neeson and he's starstruck. He's like, oh my God, like, Liam Neeson is asking me where to eat, and so the Liam Neeson obviously has had enough, and he grabs him by the shoulder, and he's like, come on, man, tell me where the steakhouse is, and he's like, it's over this way, thank you, and then he goes on his way. He got shooken down by Liam Neeson to find out where the steakhouse was.
It likely would have been Heinz. That would have been the closest proximity good steak joint to go to in Winnipeg from the Fort Garry at that point. By the way, the movie that you're talking about, it's actually called Ice Road. It was released in 2021. And he has a very specific set of chills.
Because Gimli's so damn cold.
You're welcome.
That's amazing. That's awesome. That's the time I almost met Liam Neeson. A couple other notes on the dock, a little short housekeeping stuff. The hip rehab is going well. We are on schedule currently. I got to go back to Winnipeg first couple days of April for what?
Yeah, I'm looking forward to that. And if I understand correctly, you, according to your vlog that I just watched earlier this week, could be end of April, early May?
That's the plan. So I'm coming back for a meeting with my surgeon, my good-looking, sexy piece of meat surgeon, Doc. I can't say his name, sorry. But so April 3rd, I get to go see him. He's going to kind of reevaluate, takes a new x-ray, all that kind of stuff to kind of see like a before and after how we're doing and get the final clear off or sign off on me skating in full gear. We'll probably know beforehand how we're looking, but I'm going to be in skates, like just goalie skates, kind of feeling out the ice again, probably end of March, beginning of April. And then full gear is end of April. That's the goal, is to get in full gear, kind of do some testing. We're going to run into some speed bumps when I start skating again, just because like the motion of everything that we fixed is going to be so demanding on the hips. So that'll be kind of a tough period, probably the end of April, May. But hopefully by June, 100% up and running, at, you know, full balls to the wall kind of deal. But right now we are week 4 on 5 post-surgery, and we're already at week 8. Almost going on week 9 of like progress for like where I should be at. Like I did a butterfly for the first time last night at the physio place. I have like double the flare on my right side as my left side. My physio guy says to me, he says, your left hip is no longer your bad hip, so you can stop, or your good hip. You can stop calling it that. Your surgery side is your good hip now.
You might as well have gotten them both done at the same time, for crying out loud.
They won't legally do that in Canada. Trust me, I tried, but they won't legally do it. That's another conversation for a different day.
So hang on. They'll let Madonna get all the plastic surgery in the world and go and present at the Grammys, but you're not allowed to get a better hip.
Apparently, this is what my physio guy told me last night. If you're willing to pay, and you can pay for private surgery in Canada, my surgery would have been about 15 grand per hip. So if I mustered up 30 grand, I could have got them both done at the same time. But with public healthcare, where my surgery was free, they can only legally do one hip at a time every 9 months.
Wow. Before we go, lost a good one. Bobby Hull. I had a chance to work with Bobby, with the Bobby Hull Children's Foundation on a handful of times. And yeah, I woke up from a nap last week and read that news. That was pretty tough. So to Patrick McCullough, who I also work with in that organization. Yeah, we're thinking about Bobby. Winnipeg Jets, lost a good one.
He's probably having a cold one up in heaven. Probably not at Rogers Arena. They're $11 a beer at Rogers Arena. Yeah, Dave, here. Cheers to you, buddy. Cheers to you. And cheers to everybody listening to the podcast. Sling the Biscuit, we do a new episode every Sunday. That is going to be at 11 a.m. Eastern. That is 10 in Winnipeg, 9 in Calgary, 8 on the West Coast, San Francisco, Vancouver, Los Angeles. That is 4 in Sweden, 3 in the UK, 5 in Finland, and 11 p.m. in China. The podcast, if you're not on the video version, you got it. It's on YouTube. Great high-quality video of Dave's face and me in my lovely apartment that my girlfriend and I both share. And we look forward to seeing you next Sunday on the next episode of the podcast, for episode 29. Check out Sheath Underwear if you haven't. The best pair of underwear money can buy with the code BISCUIT69. Will get you 20% off. I promise you, you will love Sheath Underwear. And again,
don't forget, penis, balls, testicles, separated. Perfect.
We'll see you next Sunday, everybody. Thanks for listening.